x equals 0, such that the total charge is some fixed value. So this is not a function. It doesn't have a well-defined value at 0. As you probably know, it's proportional to the three-dimensional Dirac delta function. And so far, you may not have noticed any differences in the way you manipulate delta in an ordinary function, but I'll give you some examples of when we need to be careful when we're dealing with objects that are distributions and not ordinary functions. So this is one reason. Another reason to study distributions is to make sense of seemingly ill-defined expressions like the nth derivative of the absolute value of x. So this doesn't make sense if you try to define the derivative using the rules you learned in your first calculus course at x equals 0. But we can unambiguously define this the derivatives of this function using distributions. In the same sense, seemingly ambiguous integrals, like the integral over the real numbers of 1 over x dx, which you might want to argue using symmetry that it should be 0, but you're canceling off plus infinity and minus infinity. And in more complicated cases, it's not clear what to do. But using distributions, we can make sense of seemingly ambiguous integrals. Other reasons to study distributions are when we're studying limits of sequences of functions. They don't always exist if you demand that the limit is a function, or if you want to solve a variational problem. So distributions will allow us to solve or take limits of sequences of functions, solve variational problems that we couldn't solve before, define derivatives or integrals that might be ambiguous otherwise. So those are a few of the reasons why we want to study distributions. So before I define what a distribution is, I just want to elaborate on the problems or ambiguities that come about if you think of the one distribution that you all know that's not a function, if you try to think of this as a function. So this is the Dirac delta, the unfortunately named Dirac delta function. So you've probably seen the Dirac delta defined, I'm going to put this in quotes for now because we'll see we need to be a little careful here, as the limit of a sequence of functions. Where, for example, could take the family of functions in this case to be a top hat function that gets progressively narrower as sigma goes to 0. So we could define it to be 1 over sigma if x is less than 1 over 2 sigma. Sigma over 2, and 0 otherwise. May have seen it defined using a different limit, but the important property of these limits is that the limit as sigma goes to 0 of f sigma of x equals 0 for x not equal to 0, and the integral of f sigma of x dx is 1 for sigma greater than 0. So any such sequence of that is the usual way of thinking about the delta function. Okay. So what's the problem with this? So this is not a function. It doesn't have a well-defined limit at 0. But before I go into the problems, I just want to give you a few definitions. What do we mean by function spaces? And so we can see more clearly the problems with thinking about delta as a function. So a function space is a vector space whose elements are, and this is going to be a provisional definition. We'll make a slight modification in a minute. Are functions with a norm that satisfies following properties. One, positivity. That means that the norm of any function is greater than or equal to 0. Two, a unique identity. These are sometimes lumped together. The norm of f is 0, if and only if f is 0. Triangle inequality. So that means that the norm of f plus g is less than or equal to the norm of f plus the norm of g. And linear homogeneity. So that means that the norm of lambda f is the absolute value of lambda times norm of f, where lambda is a number and f and g are functions, are in the function space f. Okay. So why did I leave that blank? I'll come back to that in a minute. So we'll mostly be interested in function spaces where the norm comes from an inner product. So an inner product space the norm comes from an inner product. And so that means that norm squared is the inner product of the function with itself. And we will basically only be interested in the case where the inner product is the usual just integral of f star g. For the most part, we'll be restricting to real functions, but in the case that we have complex functions, we need to take the complex conjugate of the first function. And so the function space L2 of AB is a set of square integral functions. On the interval a, b, we're allowing a and b to be infinite too. So a square integral just means that if we take the absolute value of f squared and integrate it, we get a finite number. So this is not a general enough space to contain the delta function. It's not an element of L2. Before I show you that, let's come back to this blank I left there. So if we define this function space, we need to have a unique identity. So f1 of x is 0, clearly has norm 0. But so does any function that differs from this function at a point. So for instance, if we define f2 of x to be, say, 0 for x not equal to 1 and pi for x equal to 1, and this has norm 0 as well. So we need to identify these functions if we're going to have a unique identity. So that means that we revise our definition up here. A function space is a vector space whose elements are equivalence classes of functions. And we identify any two functions that, so a function f is equivalent to a function g if we can add any function to f that's in the equivalence class of 0 and get g. Okay, so this is a fairly broad class of functions. We haven't put any conditions on continuity or differentiability. So most of these functions are not continuous or differentiable. But it's still not general enough to contain the delta function. And to see that, we can consider our sequence f sigma. And compute its norm. So if we compute the norm of f sigma squared, this, I'll just say in L2 minus infinity, infinity, norm of f sigma squared is just the integral from minus infinity to infinity of 1 over sigma squared f sigma squared, which is the integral from minus sigma over 2 to sigma over 2 of 1 over sigma squared dx, which is just 1 over sigma. So that means that as sigma goes to 0, this diverges, and the limit is undefined. So this thing that we like to think of as the delta function is, does not live in this very general function space.
Yeah. When you identify the general function as a zero, I mean, how do you actually identify? Because there are a bunch of different ways to a function that will actually give zero norm. So how do you identify?
So any function that if we integrate it from A to B, and integrate it square from A to B and get zero, we identify all of those functions with zero. So basically, those are all the functions that just you can change zero at accountable or just at some set of points. We can change it at infinitely many points, and as long as the square integrates to zero, that's identified with zero. And we can add that to any function, and we get an equivalent function. Okay, so what? So it's not a function. Does that that doesn't necessarily indicate we can't use it, but we'll see that. I'll give you an example in a minute that shows that it's problematic if we try to take the delta out of an integral. So here's a construction that shows when we have to be careful. So let's, and this works for our example F sigma, but it's more general than that. So let's consider a family of functions, G sigma, such that we want to converge to delta. It satisfies properties that the integral of g sigma of x dx is 1 for sigma greater than 0. The limit as sigma goes to 0 of g sigma of x is 0 for x not equal to 0. And finally, we want the limit function to fit in the following set of boxes. So draw this over here. So this is x. Let's draw first a box of width epsilon. Height 1. Second, a box of width epsilon over 2, height 1, and so on. And we want our family of functions g sigma to satisfy that for each x naught and each epsilon, there is a sigma naught such that for all sigma less than sigma naught, g sigma of x naught fits in the boxes. So our example, f sigma is one such family of functions. And to see that, we note that if we choose sigma naught equal x naught, then f sigma of x naught equals 0 for all sigma less than sigma naught. And to see that, note that x naught equals sigma naught, which is greater than sigma, which is greater than sigma over 2. And f sigma is 0 for any x greater than sigma over 2. So what does this mean? So this means that the limit g of x, which is the limit as sigma goes to 0, of g sigma of x fits in the boxes. So that implies that the integral minus infinity to infinity of g of x dx is less than the area of the boxes, which is just epsilon plus epsilon over 2, epsilon over 4, and so on, which is 2 epsilon. So that's to be true for any epsilon. So that tells us that the limit function has zero integral, which is not what we wanted at all. We wanted this to be the delta function, the delta distribution, which has integral 1. So this tells us that the limit, the integral of the limit as sigma goes to 0, g sigma of x dx is 0, which is not equal to 1, which is the limit as sigma goes to 0 of the integral from minus infinity to infinity of g sigma of x dx. So the order matters here. So this is one example of what can go wrong if we try to think about delta as a function. So we've illustrated some of the problems with thinking about delta as a function. Let's move on and try to define it and see what we can do with it. Define distributions in general. So how can we do that? Yes.
I was just wondering, what's the series he wrote?
In the second line, this is the, so epsilon is the area of the first box.
Okay.
Epsilon over 2 is the area of the second box, epsilon over 4. So this just sums to 2 epsilon.
Okay.
It's an infinite series that where each box has half the area of the previous box. Okay. So any other questions on that? So this problem basically came about because we tried to deal with delta outside of an integral. We've never run into any problems with delta as long as you keep it inside the integral. So what we're going to think about distributions as are functionals that map functions to real numbers. So a functional is a function of basically a function of infinitely many variables. Most commonly, it takes a function as its input and outputs something, in this case, a real number. And so what we can think about is delta, as long as it's inside an integral, is an example of a functional. So it takes the integral of delta times some function. Takes a function as its input and outputs a real number or complex number. So we'll take that as our inspiration to try to define distributions carefully. So since we're going to think about distributions as functionals that act on functions, we need to specify which functions we're going to allow our distributions to act on. And so the functions that distributions act on are known as test functions. And the space of distributions you end up with depends on the test functions you allow. The more restrictive conditions you place on your test functions, the larger the space of distributions you'll end up with. So we're going to call our test function space curly D. And unless otherwise specified, I'm going to choose the test function space to be set of continuous and infinitely differentiable functions. So this is continuous with infinitely many derivatives. With compact support. And compact support means that it vanishes identically outside of a compact region. So this is a highly restrictive set of conditions. We could relax them and still have delta be in our space of distributions, but this will make things easier for the most part. Yes?
Is there any reason that we couldn't use e to the minus x squared or something like this? I mean, this is one of the most beautiful functions that we use all the time. So is there any way that we can see now that it doesn't work? I mean, it's also the case reasonably fast. So.
Most of what I'm going to say will work if, instead of compact support, we just impose that they are continuous, infinitely differentiable, and decay faster than any polynomial as x goes to plus or minus infinity. This will simplify some of the derivations.
Actually, I cannot really read.
Oh, sorry, let me erase this up. Is that better?
Actually, I think the layer size is pretty small.
So oh, sorry. Okay. So this says compact support means that it vanishes identically outside of a compact region. So it's zero except for in some finite interval. Okay. Can anyone give me an example of a function that satisfies these conditions? It's very restrictive. So that we need a compact support. It's on the right track. Yeah, we can. So there's one easy example. Zero. But this wouldn't be a very interesting test function space if zero were the only element. But there's another one. So people have been suggesting something like e to the minus 1 over x. But we need compact support. So this is equal to 0, and all its derivatives are equal to 0 at x equals 1. So if we choose this for x less than 1 and 0 for x greater than 1, that works. Note that there are, zero is the only analytic function in this test function space. So we won't, if we choose this test function space, we can't use contour integration, which will be important on your tutorial tomorrow. Okay. So we'll stick with this test function space for now. And so what are the space of distributions? So before we define the space of distributions, we just need one quick intermediate definition. So the note by D star, the dual vector space, the dual vector space of linear functionals of D to the real numbers. And by linear here, what I mean is that for any U in D star, we should have that U of alpha phi plus beta psi as alpha U of phi plus beta U of psi for alpha and beta numbers and phi and psi test functions. So the space of distributions just places one additional constraint. So the space of distributions is the largest continuous dual space. So continuous means that if phi n minus phi goes to 0 as n goes to infinity, then u of phi n goes as n goes to infinity to u of phi. So a distribution is a functional that is linear, continuous, and finite. So just a word about notation. So notice that I've mostly been using the notation that a distribution is a functional that acts on some test function. In this case, we'll choose delta. So we know that delta, when it acts on a test function, just gives us phi of 0. Another way that is useful to write distributions is using this integral notation. Not every distribution can be written in this way, but most can. Most of the ones we'll deal with can. And so this is another way to write the same thing. Mathematicians don't like this as much, but it's fine for most purposes. Some of the references you might encounter use a pairing. They'll say that the pairing of delta and phi is phi of 0. I don't like this notation as much because it suggests an inner product that these live in different spaces. So, well, I won't be using this one. I'll either be using this one or this one. The reason this distribution, this notation is nice, is it that, in fact, you know a large class of distributions besides the delta function. So any locally integrable function is a distribution. And so by locally integrable, I just mean that the integral from c to d of f of x dx is finite for all real c and d. And what do I mean when I say the function is a distribution? So I said that a function distributions are functionals that act on test functions. This is a slight abuse of notation that's or terminology that's commonly used. What I really mean is induce. And so a locally integrable function induces a distribution. So, and the distribution is just given by the integral of that function times whatever test function it is. It acts on. So if f of x is a function, is a locally integrable function, then we can define f of phi as the integral from a to b of f of x, phi of x, dx. I'll raise this. Okay, so, yes?
What do you mean by finite? The distribution is a function that is finite.
That means that if you act with a distribution on any test function, you should get a real number.
Right. Yes.
Does it also work for convolutions? Like in general, I can think about the distribution as a convolution of f and the test function.
Does that also define a distribution? Yes. Okay. So let's look at some examples and see if we can tell whether they're distributions or not. So suppose I want to define a distribution u at phi of 0 squared. Is that a distribution? Why or why not?
It's not linear.
Not linear, right. U of u of, say, phi plus psi is not equal to u of phi plus u of psi. What about this one? Let's call it something else, v of phi. Suppose we define it to be this. Is that a distribution or not?
Yes.
Yes, I heard someone say that. So this is, it's finite. If phi is a test function, these are continuous functions with compact support, which means they're bounded. So this is a real number. It's continuous. And it is linear. So these are more or less manifest in the definition. OK. So that's what distributions are. So what can we do with them? One of the main things we want to do is take derivatives. So one of my motivations that I just erased was that we can make sense of derivatives of things that we can't compute using the rules of differentiation used in Calculus 101. So, and why is that? So suppose we wanted to define this as the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of u of x plus epsilon minus u of x over epsilon. What's wrong with this? That's right. I heard someone say it. So u is not defined at a point. We say two distributions are equal if they give the same result, if they act same result if they act on any test function. So if we change a distribution at a single point, that won't change its integral against any test function. So for the same reason that we couldn't that zero wasn't the unique identity in L2, we can't uniquely define the value of a distribution at a point. So this doesn't make sense. So u is not defined at a point. Okay. So we need to try again. So let's take inspiration from the distributions that are functions. If we take a distribution that is a function, we can write it as, and we want to compute its derivative. Write it like this. And there's basically only one thing we can do from here, which is integrate by parts. So this is equal to u of x, phi of x. I'll just consider a and b as plus or minus infinity. Evaluated at plus and minus infinity minus the integral okay. So this is okay if u is a function. Now let's look at these boundary terms. So phi is a test function. So it has compact support, which means it vanishes identically outside of a bounded region. So it's zero at plus and minus infinity, and it's zero in a whole region around there. So if u is an ordinary function, this is going to go to zero. It's identically zero at plus and minus infinity. So this wins, even if this blows up at plus or minus infinity. So this is zero. So what we're left with is just this integral. So this works since phi is a test function. Okay. So that's how it works if u is a function. We can just take that as a definition for all u. So we will define u prime of phi to be minus u phi prime. That was our result in the case where u is a function, and we'll just take this as a definition in general. And similarly, the nth derivative is just minus 1 to the n u of the nth derivative of phi. Okay. So, and note that this is where the fact that we've chosen our test functions to have infinitely many derivatives is important. So if we had chosen a less restrictive test function space, we couldn't necessarily make sense of this expression, and our distribution space would be smaller. OK.
Can you explain again why you choose the larger space?
Why we choose
the largest field space?
OK, so we're just saying that any functional that acts on our test function space that's linear, continuous, and finite is a distribution. We could have placed additional restrictions, and that would give us a subset of the space of distributions. But by largest, I just mean that any functional that satisfies those three properties is in our space of distributions. Okay, so let's see how this works. We'll go through a couple examples. Of computing derivatives of distribution. So start out with perhaps a more familiar one, and then we'll look at a less familiar one. So let's compute the distributional derivative of the Heaviside function. So the Heaviside function is just a step function. It's 1 for x positive and 0 for x negative. Value at 0 doesn't really matter. And so this is a distribution. So let's check. We act with the distribution induced by the Heaviside function on a test function. What we get is just this, which, using the definition of the Heaviside function, just gives us the integral 0 to infinity, 5x, dx. And this is finite, since phi is bounded. And it has compact support. So this is the integral is over, really over a finite region, and the integrand is finite, so it has to be finite. Using this expression, it's manifestly linear and continuous. So anything that can be put in this form is manifestly linear and continuous. So we don't really need to check that. In fact, we didn't even need to check that it's finite because the Heaviside function is locally integrable. So I stated I didn't show you that any function that's locally integrable is a distribution. So it doesn't matter that the integral over all of the reals diverges. Local integral just means that it's integral over any finite region. It's finite. Okay. So this is a distribution. And let's use the definition we came up with to compute its derivatives, its first derivative. So we know that theta prime of phi is minus theta of phi prime. And we can write that as minus the integral minus infinity to infinity theta of x phi prime of x dx. Using the fact that this is just a step function gives us minus the integral from 0 to infinity, phi prime of x, dx, which we can integrate and get minus phi of infinity minus phi of 0. But phi of infinity is 0 because it's a test function. So this just gives us phi of 0, which is the same thing as delta of phi. So since theta prime acting on a test function phi always gives us the same result as delta acting on a test function phi, that means that theta prime is equal to delta. It's equal as distributions. So you may have known this, this is just a good check to just to show that our new technology for taking derivatives works. Let's look at a more involved example. And along the way, we'll meet our second example of a distribution that is not a function. So example 2. Let's suppose we want to compute the derivative of the natural log of the absolute value of x. So the natural log of x is a distribution, first of all, so it's locally integrable. So might want to compute the derivative using our familiar rule. So we get minus the integral of natural log of x, I prime of x, dx.
Sorry, man. How is locally integrable? I cannot have any set of including zero, right?
So it's locally integrable because...
Almost everywhere.
Almost everywhere. Almost everywhere. So as long as... Yeah. If they're arbitrarily close to zero. So this is I'll derive a relation that will show that in a minute. Okay, so if we wanted to integrate by parts, we'd be in trouble. So if we move the derivative over here, we get 1 over x, and 1 over x integrated against phi of x is not necessarily finite. For every test function phi. So this seems to suggest it's not obviously finite for every phi. So it's not immediately obvious that this thing is even a distribution. It is true that the derivative of any distribution is a distribution, but it's not obvious from this expression here. So what can we do? So if you remember back at the beginning of lecture, we defined the delta as a limit of sequence. So we had trouble when we were thinking about the limit as a limit of functions. But limits of distributions that converge always have a limit that's a distribution. So if we can construct the log of the absolute value of x as a limit of distributions, take the derivative of some of the limiting sequence of distributions, then we can find the derivative of the natural log of x. So what do I mean by that? So the natural log of x as a distribution acting on phi is equal to the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of the integral from minus infinity to minus epsilon plus the integral from epsilon to infinity of the natural log, the absolute value of x, phi of x, dx. So we've cut out a small region around 0 where the problematic part of this integral is. And in fact, the part we cut out is equal to 0 in the limit that epsilon goes to 0 for any phi. And we can see that as follows. Move over here. So let's look at the part we cut out. So we cut out this part, the limit epsilon goes to 0 of integral minus epsilon to epsilon log absolute value of x, phi of x, dx. And I claim that this part is 0 in the limit. And to see that, let's take the absolute value. So that has to be less than or equal to the limit epsilon goes to 0 of the absolute value of the log of x, absolute value of phi of x, dx, which has to be less than or equal to, if we just replace this absolute value of phi of x with the maximum value of the absolute value of phi of x in this interval. And then we can pull it out of the integral. And we can then simplify. So this is equal to the maximum of phi of x, limit epsilon goes to 0, integral from 0 to epsilon. There's two copies of minus natural log of x. And we can now do this integral. Minus 2. And here we get x log x minus 1, valued at 0 and epsilon. And so this term is 0. The x times the minus 1 is 0, so we take the limit. This other term is also 0 because x log the limit as x goes to 0, x log x is limit x goes to 0 of log x over 1 over x, which is limit x goes to 0 of 1 over x over minus 1 over x squared, which is 0. So this whole thing is just 0. So we didn't cut anything out. In the limit that epsilon goes to 0. Which means we can use this form to find the weaker distributional derivative of natural log of x. This formula up here defines the weak or distributional derivative. Okay. So let's use our new form for the distribution log of absolute value of x to compute the weak derivative. So this then is equal to the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of integral minus infinity minus epsilon. It's integral epsilon to infinity of log of x I prime of x dx with a minus sign up front. Now we can integrate by parts. There's no problem near 0 because we're cut that region out. So we can write this as limit epsilon goes to 0. Plus some boundary terms. So the ones at plus and minus infinity are 0 for the same reason as before. So the only ones we need to worry about are the ones at epsilon and minus epsilon. And those are phi of epsilon log of epsilon minus phi of minus epsilon log of epsilon. Yeah. Okay. So these terms can be rewritten as, so phi of epsilon minus phi of minus epsilon is approximately two phi prime of epsilon times epsilon, if epsilon is small. Then we just have the log epsilon going along for the ride. And so as epsilon goes to 0, this goes to 0 as before. So this goes to 0 as epsilon goes to 0. So we can get rid of this term in the limit. And what we end up with is that the log, the derivative of the log of the absolute value of x is the limit as epsilon goes to 0 minus infinity to minus epsilon plus epsilon to infinity 1 over x, phi of x, dx, which is known as the principal value of 1 over x distribution acting on phi. So this is principal value. And so this is a one of the other very important distributions. It's not a function, like the delta function. It's also closely connected to the I epsilon distribution that we use in quantum field theory all the time. And we'll see in tutorial tomorrow some of the connections between this distribution, the delta distribution, and the I epsilon distribution that some of you may have seen in quantum field theory before. In some sense, this distribution is one way we can make sense of the ambiguous integrals from the beginning of lecture. Are there any questions?
Yes. What's the general definition for principal value?
The general, so typically, principal value of 1 over x is by far the most common integral, but I suppose you could define principal value of 1 over x squared and put a squared or something here. But principal value just means you're cutting out this symmetric region around 0 and taking the limit that it goes to 0.
So suppose I have a function and you have several singularities, so then we just take away those singularities.
You could shift this distribution so it's not symmetric around 0. Absolutely, you could do that too. Okay. So next time, we will finish up our discussion of distributions. We will discuss multiplication of we'll continue next time. So next time we'll discuss multiplication of distributions with functions, distributions of functions. So, and some applications of distributions to functional derivatives, and then we'll move on to the gamma and zeta. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.